Good evening and welcome to 42 Minutes. It's not Tuesday, it's Wednesday night, September 12th, and Will and I are speaking this evening to Joe Alexander, sync video auteur of the highest order. He recently just dropped one on all of us, the Awe video, and we're really excited to talk about this because he's taken some of the themes that he explored in Christ Lloyd and taken them. It's a great video, Joe. Thanks for coming on tonight.
Thanks, Doug. I appreciate it, man. I'm happy to be here.
Let's see. There were three. Last time we talked to you, you had three videos, and we asked you if there was another one coming out, and you said that you really wanted to do Christopher Lloyd and show his relationship to Oz. This is something that you've been dealing with for a while then, right? I mean, how long have you seen this certain no? Do you feel a certain amount of completion now?
I'd say I feel like a 50% amount of completion. The material that I put into this last one was just about half of the entirety of it, which is about 3 years in the making right now. This video was actually the first one that I intended to make, which I had brainstormed about 3 years ago. So really feels good to finally get it out there.
Interstate 60 made a lot more sense to me when I was thinking about it, because after I watched this video and you've completed, you're kind of teaching me about Lloyd and Oz, but I see how Lloyd's part in that movie now that we kind of watched together at the same time, if you remember, has him going to the Rainbow Club or whatnot. That's very interesting to me. I mean, so you knew that when you saw Interstate 60. I mean, that's just like a direct hit, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm really excited to throw Interstate 60 into the sequel to this Oz one, you know, because I'm not finished with it. And I really think that, you know, that movie is just so strongly rooted in sync material and specifically relating to Oz and rainbows and Christopher Lloyd and even tunnels. So I'm really excited to show what's going on there.
You know, I've done a lot of work with this cartoon realm of the unreal, too. I want you to try to explain that for me.
Well, Will, I was blown away when you commented that. I think you wrote that as a comment, right, on my video? The cartoon
realm?
Yeah. You know, I was blown away about that because, believe it or not, you know, that's what my next sync video is about. And that's what all this has led to. For me, you know, syncing with pop culture and syncing with movies and media has been about, you know, human beings getting some kind of message. And the message, or at least one of the messages in my mind, is that we essentially are embodiments of the creative force. You know, we have instilled in us certain powers that normally only attribute to God or some outside godly force. And I believe that videos are going to play a role in allowing us to realize our own divinity. And I think that the role of cartoons in that process is that, you know, cartoons are sort of these creations or manifested characters that we created, and they're almost capable of anything. You know, they can do anything. They can jump off cliffs. They can fly. They
right.
Can
it's Oz. It's
craziest.
Oz where fucking anything happens. Like flying
anything
monkeys.
Happens.
Right. I like the way that crosses over into the whole Anastasia with Lloyd, too. But Lloyd does a lot of – bottom line, Lloyd does a lot of cartoons because of his voice. I mean, he has that –
Yeah, absolutely. You're right on point. You know, he actually plays a character called Professor Toon in a series over in London, I think it airs. And he has all kinds of instances where he transforms into the realm of Toon, or where he's presiding over the land of Toons.
Oh.
And it's interesting also that the word Toon itself is actually, if you turn it sideways, it's actually two Oz. So when you watch Who Framed Roger Rabbit and they have the sign pointing to Toontown, the sign is saying, you know, to Oz Town or to Oz. So it's all very interesting.
So you got a ton more, don't you? Obsession has set in. Are you going to finish it?
Yeah, I hope to finish it. You know, unfortunately, it's been a long time since in between videos, but I want to shorten that gap and you know, release them more periodically.
This one took a lot of work, I can tell. I mean, there's a lot of
man.
Still shots. Where'd you get? Were you searching and getting clip art? I mean,
Yeah, man, you know, it's fun. You know, you browse Google and search for stuff. Sometimes you search Google, and sometimes Google just leads you to stuff that you needed. So,
there's a poetic repetition that you use in the voiceover that's really, it works effectively because you're reinforcing things that you say. Almost like a mantra. Certain things come off. How do you script your voiceover? Do you write everything down, or do you kind of wing it a little bit as you're?
Yeah, no, I don't wing it. It's a long process, actually. For this particular video, I have 12 different rewrites of the script, and that's what takes me the most time. You know, once I have that in order, the rest of the video falls into place in a matter of, 10 days or so. But the script took me about 4 or 5 months because, you know, I'm sure you guys are familiar, but when you dive into a whole sync thread, so much of it is, individually significant to you. And so creating an accessible narrative that other people can relate to really becomes a challenge. And, and that's essentially what I'm trying to do when I write that script. So,
yeah, that was well said. But it makes sense because you're the one who's seeing it. I mean, you're receiving this information. I mean, we've talked about, okay, there's certain things, though. There's certain things that seem like somebody's fucking with you as far as Lloyd's concerned.
Yes.
You know what I mean?
Yes.
So there's like a double play on it. The way that you can lay it out to a certain individual will make them relate. But when you first see it, I mean, there's a certain amount of it that's generated strictly from you.
Mm. You mean from me or from the individual?
Well, I'm sorry. I'm saying as one. I say that a lot. People get pissed at me because I say you. When I'm saying you, I'm saying as like you as consciousness or whatever. Like it's like saying one doesn't do this or one doesn't do that. I say you wouldn't do that or you wouldn't do that. But I'm sorry about that. Anyways, I mean,
no,
there's certain things about this that scream intention. Especially
yeah,
with like the
agree.
Tunnels. What do you think about the grays, though? I mean, because I like in – I can't remember. Okay, you have Stargate of Oz is your newest.
Yes.
Lloyd on Mount Olympus was the one before that.
Yeah.
Lloyd
R. Christ – Lloyd's disciple was that the next one, and then the very first one was Lloyd R. Christbearer.
Lloyd R. Christbearer, right.
Yeah.
So basically Stargate of Oz was the first one you wanted to make, but to even get to that, you had to go back and do all the rest of it.
Yeah, I really had to establish Lloyd as a solid Zeus resonator, you know, because I wanted to establish that he really embodies a high level of divinity. And, you know, that essentially is someone who you can think of as leading us down the journey of enlightenment. So that was important to establish him as this Christ figure, this Zeus figure, this Horus figure, in order to set up the fact that he presides over this land of Oz, of tunes, of imagination.
Right. Was he the imagination and the time travel? See how that's related? It's like anything anything outside of the normal present is like the land of the dead. Do you pick up on the same thing?
Oh, no question. I mean, even in Who Framed Roger Rabbit, when they travel into the tunnel and they enter this land of tunes and imagination and light and color, when they find Christopher Lloyd in there, the only thing he says to them is he tells them that you're all dead. I don't know if you remember, but they chase him down this alleyway and he yells, "You're dead, you're all dead." So it's absolutely, you know, it's one and the same, this land of enlightenment, land of the dead,
land
of tombs.
You're all dead. Yeah.
Yep, that's it, yeah. So I think you're right on point there.
Oh, see, now check this. This is where I came up with this whole cartoon realm of the unreal. One of the major ones that's cool is, I mean, if you think of Roger Rabbit, there's only one other movie that's even similar, besides, of course, Song of the South or whatever. But if you remember Cool World, do you remember that movie?
I never saw it, no.
But you know what? Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
No, unfortunately, I don't.
Yeah.
Remember, I grew up overseas, so I probably was overseas when it came out.
Okay, you need to look this up. Have you seen End of Days with Arnold? You know the sync significance of the Twin Towers in End of Days when Robin Tunney's walking around with the baby. Do you have any idea what I'm talking about?
No, I'm sorry, I don't.
Damn, Joe.
Yeah.
Damn.
But that's cool. That's good, though.
There's so much more to this, Joe. It's so
good. That's what I like to hear.
But so the thing that's interesting is I wonder about your process. Are you watching these movies deeply and there's a really small scope of movies that you take in? Because some of the sync guys, they watch lots and lots and lots of movies. Like, they really cast a wide net to kind of come up with.
Yeah. What I
so
like
are
to
you
do...
constantly watching movies like Will does?
No, I'm trying to keep it tight, and I try, like, I've probably watched Who Framed Roger Rabbit and Back to the Future and other Lloyd videos maybe 20 times each. You know, I watch them frame by frame by frame, and I wouldn't say that I just watch tons of videos. When I'm doing Lloyd research and sync videos, I really try to stick to just a couple of them because I really want to extract the whole out of them. You know, to me, it's really fun to find everything that there is to know in the universe just in this one video or this one group of videos, and you know, the deeper you look, the more you find in there, and so it's real fun to me to really focus my attention on just a few videos.
So I was talking, here's a funny little quirk. Your video came up last night. Alan did an Always Record, and we were talking about 9/11 and various other things, but one of the guys that was present for the call, his name is John Fell Ryan. He actually goes to your Griffith Observatory, and so he was talking about that, like, it's a place that he actually goes, like, it's a cool place, he likes to go there with his son, and I just thought that was too crazy.
Well, it's a pretty big landmark in LA. I mean, it's a pretty well-known specific landmark. It's just weird, and I've seen it in other movies. Since then, I've seen that tunnel used in other movies, and I've especially seen the observatory used in other movies. I saw the observatory is used in Yes Man. The observatory is used in Rocketeer, actually. Mm-hmm. And then when I was studying Andras Jones, he's actually in a TV episode called Alien Nation, where he is basically within a love triangle of a redhead and an alien, because it's Alien Nation. You remember those weird looking motherfuckers? Anyways, the thing is it's the specific use of it as far as Lloyd is concerned. It is right. The real punch of what Joe's getting at. And then not everybody can say that they have that tunnel that many times. That's the specific thing that relates to but see here, the Alien Nation is interesting because there's such the alien tinge with the tunnel in Back to the Future 2, because you laid it out perfect in your video, because you say, you know, he's Marty McFly's got the gray manuscript, he gets it, he gets to the edge of the tunnel, I think this is in Lloyd's Disciple,
Lloyd's Disciple.
And then the rainbow banner comes down. Marty grabs hold of it, and he's lifted off in a UFO. And when you say it's a UFO, you realize, because that's what Biff is seeing. Biff comes out of the tunnel. He looks up, and he sees, like, what the hell is that? It doesn't even look like a DeLorean. It's like it's a UFO. And the manuscript, the gaze, and but the more interesting thing also is you pointed out that the Roger Rabbit rabbit is in the window when he first initially gets the gray manuscript. And, of course, Lloyd is in both of those movies. But the rabbit takes place in 1947, which is the beginning of the grays. Do you know that?
I'm sorry, say that one more time.
Okay, so initially the gray mythology starts with Roswell, which happens in 1947.
Yep, okay.
That's when Roger Rabbit takes place. The actual movie is supposed to be, you know, set in the year 1947.
And I can't say that I knew that, but
and you have the relationship. There's always the Pooka or the rabbit in association with the aliens.
Mm.
Do you know this? Is this familiar?
Well, there's definitely intimate entrainment with, you know, the rabbit and the rising Christ and all things with to do with enlightenment and journeying the rabbit hole. So
right. The rabbit hole. So what do you think of that? I mean, what do you think of this alien tinge? I can understand the Lloyd, the Christ bearer, him being Christ, him being coming back from the dead like he does in Anastasia, I mean, him being Zeus with the torch and Back to the Future, and him being Oz. But what is this alien tinge?
Yeah, the alien tinge is remarkable to me because, you know, if you think about the works that started a lot of people's minds on this New Age movement or synchromistic, you know, movement or whatever you want to call it, you have to look at, you know, Zachariah Sitchin and what he's done, you know, for all of everyone who's trying to open their mind, and how he talks about, you know, humans in the future going back in time and being perceived as gods or as flying UFOs or whatnot. And when you watch Back to the Future and you interpret it in that way, you realize that that really is literally what's happening. You know, there's no sync twist. There's no there's no twist about it. That is literally what's happening, is that the people of that time would observe Christopher Lloyd in his DeLorean as an alien.
And they do. They do.
They do, exactly.
Right when he gets there, he's the man from Pluto.
Exactly. So it is essentially Zachariah Sitchin's narrative of the alien humans from the future coming back. And to see this alien essentially abduct a human immediately after basically extracting him from the end of this tunnel, you know, while he's holding this manuscript that's called Grays, is, you know, it's just beyond belief. It just blows you away. I think that that alien part really has significance to it. And then, you know, you can look at Buckaroo Banzai, where Christopher Lloyd, actually, he plays an alien in that movie, and he drives through that very same tunnel on a van that's sporting this logo that's, you know, synonymous everywhere with Stargates, you know, the haloed pyramid on the front of his van. He's driving this van through the same tunnel. He's an alien. It's really a remarkable narrative.
And then him, of course, in DuckTales on top of the pyramid once again. And is the eagle and the pyramid on the back of the dollar bill at the same time?
Absolutely, absolutely.
That's fucking nuttier than batshit. Yeah.
Nuttier than batshit. Yep, you got it, man.
Wow. You know, I have to admit, Alan pointed that out to me. He wanted me to ask you that, Joe, specifically about the alien. He's the one who told me that Roger Rabbit takes place in 1947 and stuff. So
that's right. That's right. He had messaged me about it. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah.
So now, oh boy, it's just so weird. What do you think about movies that are coming up now, like The Wizard of Oz with Franco? I mean, do you watch movies in the States now?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I go to almost every movie that comes out just for entertainment purposes, but obviously I synchronistically interpret it. But, you know, this Oz movie has obviously got me excited, and the timing of it couldn't be more perfect to me. You know, looking at the whole age of Aquarius and the 2012 transition, this age that we're in, it doesn't seem any more appropriate that this entering of the Land of Oz would come out in 2013. It's just so beautiful to me. And I just know that it's going to be swamped in some kind of synchromistic narrative that we can connect to all this. I really can't wait. I would have loved if Lloyd would have been cast as Oz, but no luck.
So if you're joining us right now, this is 42 minutes on the day after 9/11 in 2012. We're talking to Joe Alexander, professional basketball player and Sinkhead extraordinaire. You can find his channel on, of course, www.youtube.com /user/barelyhuman11. So his channel is Barely Human on YouTube, and you can see all of the work there. More to come. So what's to expect next? What's the next part of the narrative?
Well, the next part is I want to show how this land of the dead, or the land of enlightenment, it's all the same thing, is that once we sort of traverse the death of our limited self or the death of our ego, we enter this land of enlightenment. And that doesn't literally have to mean we die physically, but it certainly means that mentally we die in a way and we ascend. And, you know, some of the interesting points that I'm going to use is to continue to use the Griffith Park Tunnel. And I don't know if you know this, but essentially next to the Griffith Park Tunnel is the Hollywood sign. And
Right. It's part of the same Hollywood Hills.
Part of the Hollywood Hills. And there's a lot of interesting, you know, astrological phenomenon and strange things that are going on with this Griffith Park Tunnel, the observatory, and this Hollywood sign all kind of crammed together. In regard to rabbit holes and tunneling and ascension. If you watch the movie Hop, you'll see that this white rabbit actually goes through a portal and he ends up coming out at the Hollywood sign. And if you were to ever go to LA and go to the Hollywood sign, you'd realize that it is basically conjoined to the Griffith Park Tunnel and the observatory. So I'm going to continue to develop this narrative of this specific area of LA essentially being a hub of ascension activity. And to me, the reason for that is obvious. You know, I view media as a tool for ascension for mankind. It's almost like we're like the cells of a body, and the media is basically pulsing information to give it to us. And it makes sense because everyone's paying attention to it. So obviously that would be the hub for where we get our information. And Hollywood is the hub of media. You know, it's the center of global consciousness, if there ever was one, besides maybe 9/11. So it makes sense that, you know, this location of Los Angeles is sort of that portal. And in fact, in the movie Percy Jackson and the Olympians, which is
that's so funny. I'm Google searching for that image because.
All right, let me in on the joke. What's going on?
Okay, well, in this movie Percy Jackson and the Olympians, obviously it's centered around Greek mythology and Zeus, which, you know, leads our attention to Christopher Lloyd and, you know, this supreme deity. And in this movie, they take the portal, this portal into the underworld or the afterlife, which obviously I'm trying to connect as being synonymous with Oz, with the land of enlightenment, with the land over the rainbow, the end of the tunnel. But the portal that they go through to the underworld is actually the H of the Hollywood sign.
Oh, yes.
So if you look at this area as being one area, one big ascension tunnel where, you know, the White Rabbit goes and Hop, the White Rabbit goes and Who Framed Roger Rabbit, Christopher Lloyd abducts people, you know, ascension is reached at this Hollywood sign, Griffith Park area. In Percy Jackson and the Olympians, it just comes together in a head where they go into the afterlife through this portal at the exact same location while swamped in this Zeus Olympian theme. It's really quite beautiful.
Hmm. Okay.
It's interesting how in that movie, I think it's like they had to pass through Las Vegas kind of as like the gateway to the underworld somehow. And
yes.
Then they actually went through the Hollywood sign. Like maybe Las Vegas is more like a limbo-y place, but.
Well, yeah, I've heard this before from this is all Celtic rebel shit. And he says there's a whole path from the Great Lakes all the way, and Hollywood is the asshole. Of course, he associates it to gayness, but do you know what I'm saying? Are they one and the same? It's like,
shit, I haven't heard this before, but who knows?
Oh, man, you don't want to hear this. But anyways, I mean, I don't want to censor it, but basically he says it's just...
Along the line, though, a guy redid Dante's Divine Comedy, and he set Hollywood... or L.A. was the underworld. And there was an artist who redid all the drawings for this, and they redid the text so that, you know, this journey to hell that he takes, he ends up, hell is Los Angeles.
Right.
Well, guys, I mean, I want to point out that I really don't think that this is just our crazy, warped, synchronistic interpretation. I believe that this is real. If you look at, you know, Greek mythology and you look at where they believed the portal to the underworld to be, it's actually a real place. It's a physical city in Italy. And, I can't remember the name of the city right now, but if you look at a map of it, you'll notice that the coastal outlines of both California and Italy, mainland Italy, they look strikingly similar. And the location of the portal to the underworld in Italy is exactly where Los Angeles is on California.
So you think that there's a real portal in Hollywood? Is that what you're implying?
Hollywood is the portal. I mean, whether you want to be concrete or not.
Yeah, I don't literally think you could walk through it physically, but when we talk about ascension portals in terms of mentally tuning into something, you know, Hollywood to me is the portal because we mentally tune into media, and media in a pop culture standpoint comes essentially from Hollywood. You know, you look at like something like Entertainment Tonight, which tunes us into Hollywood or brings us all the news from the stars, and it's called E.T., Entertainment Tonight. If you watch it, it flies under a giant logo, E.T. or extraterrestrial. You know,
Tonight is E.T. That's so smooth. I don't think I've ever heard anybody – maybe I haven't have forgotten, but that's fucking great.
You know, even the ideas of actors and stars, you know, the obvious association between a star and a star in heaven, but – you know, if you look at like deities and their power in the universe, you know, their ability to manifest. Well, if you look up power in the dictionary, the definition is the ability to act. So to me, there is some serious entrainment on a weird level going on with actors and stars in Hollywood and some sort of divinity. You know, our definition of power essentially is someone who can act, which to me is very strange. And the whole thing is just mind-blowing.
Mm-hmm. Okay, I got a quote for you. I want to hear what you think about this. If there's anything that we've learned through science, it's that our perception of the world is actually a construction. It's a construction. It's a cartoon of what is actually out there. And not only that, it's a pretty bad cartoon. This is a quote from Dean Radin. What do you think about that?
Well, I think it's beautiful. I'm sure that he would have a lot to elaborate on it, but off the top of my head, I really like it.
All right, cool, cool. So this, I mean, definitely you're considering this as a way of life. Are you leaning against the conspiratorial side that these believe? I mean, you're admitting that there's a lot of you in this, right? That you are kind of making this happen and that you are a participant and not being set some kind of programming.
I think that I'm a participant, and it's possible that there's a, you know, some sort, there's a, it's possible that there's both things going on. You know, I don't really like to think of myself as being against any sort of idea one way or another. You know, I try to embrace almost anything, and, you know, if there's anything that I would say I believe, it's that I really believe nothing. So I'm on board with conspiracy stuff. I like to entertain anything. So,
right. Have you ever seen a UFO?
I don't want to answer that. The thing about UFOs, Will, is
hold
no
on.
Reason.
You got to let me get over that.
On our little form here, I'll put yes.
No.
Oh, go ahead.
And did you get probed? That's the next question.
That's a different show. That's a different show. This ain't Whitley Strieber's Dreamland, okay? You got to tell me, though, man. What were you going to say? The thing about UFOs is what?
Yeah, the thing about UFOs is there's no reason to tell people if you see them because nobody will believe you anyway. And you know what? That type of an experience is something that you have yourself, and that if you have it, nobody can take it away from you as much as they disbelieve it. And if you were to tell somebody, you know, what would you really be sharing with them? You can't really share with them the experience. So, you know, there's no reason to say that you did if you had.
You know, the experience is real no matter what. It's like cartoons again, where the cartoons aren't real, but they still convey something that's really real.
Okay, I got another question for you, because you and I have talked about other topics too, and I don't want to nail you to the cross or anything. But, I mean, where's the spirituality in your profession? I know that you think a lot about this, man. I mean, about with the rhythms of the other players and shit, as far as how their zodiac lines up.
Well, you know, it's in my life, I really have to do my best to separate the concrete world and logical world of my profession with my abstract nutcase world of spiritual growth and exploration. And I really try to do my best. But there's places where they cross. Like, for example, I think anyone who dives in the spiritual realm will admit that they find a certain ability to manifest things that they meditate on or that they think about. You know, that goes along with spiritual awareness. And I think that those kinds of things can help you in any type of profession. And I certainly use them to further myself with my basketball career.
Let's talk about Linsanity, though.
Okay.
I mean, he was born in the year of the dragon. What do you think about that?
You know, I haven't looked too much into it, but I think I've grazed over some sync stuff, and there's certainly something there. But if you want to enlighten me, I would love to hear about it.
No, it's just the fact that he had this peak in his. I mean, there's a rhythm. You've got to be paying attention to stats if you're paying attention to sports. And there's other individuals who use – I mean, it gets nutty. Sync is nutty, bottom line. But the rhythm of athletes and when they perform – I mean, Carl Jung did this whole write-up in his book about synchronicity on how certain couples got married and then double-checked their astrology charts and figured out their charts are, like, lined up. That was one of his fucking – that was one of his the evidence in his case for synchronicity. So it's just I wonder about people's rhythms of when they're like sort of in the zone. I think of zone as kind of like being – it's the cartoon realm where you make stuff up.
Yes. Yeah, no, I think there's got to be a lot there if someone were to take the time to really research all the data, all the numbers, all the fluctuations in players and when they perform.
Michael Jordan and his cartoon realm with Bugs Bunny.
Well, he gets there going through a tunnel. I mean, a rainbow tunnel. It's really wild, actually.
That's great.
Yeah.
Christopher Lloyd, of course, and Angels in the Outfield, too.
Yeah, you know, I mean, I want to touch real quick again on what you said about his alien time travel thing, because I think that there's just so much there that can't be ignored. I'm sure you guys are familiar with back in school when they made us watch the Einstein movie of, I think it was Carl Sagan riding the bike, talking to us about traveling through time. Do you guys remember this?
I don't think I've seen it, but go on, keep going.
It's pretty famous. You know, Carl Sagan had a series of videos out talking about all sorts of scientific information, and he was saying that Einstein's theory predicted that when you travel through time or, you know, break the limits of time, you'll actually physically see a tunnel appear in front of you because of the nature of light and the way that light will reach your eyes and you know, what happens when you surpass its speed. You'll actually form this little tunnel in front of you, and you'll feel as if you are traveling through this tunnel. And, you know, that to me just lends a lot of credence to this sync web that we're on, or this sync thread that time traveling really has to do with tunnels. And it's amazing to see it all culminate in this movie, Back to the Future, because the movie is so unbelievably popular that you have to attribute some sort of significance to it just based on that alone. People are drawn to it. You know, people's subconscious, people's souls, people's spirits, they want to watch this video. It's no coincidence that it's so wildly popular. It's a phenomenon, just like The Wizard of Oz. I really believe that on those merits alone, you have to take a second look at it as containing some sort of thread that speaks to our soul or speaks to our subconscious.
See, I've often think about this. People talk bad about the popular culture, but it's popular for a reason. It's popular because
this is the conversation last night. So the mythology in the Bible, all these are is the stories of the day codified into an anthology. We have stories now. They contain the same esoteric wisdom. It's just we don't have the same value for them because they're not like canon mythology, you know. What's so bizarre is that that's kind of what we're doing. And when you bring up The Wizard of Oz, it's obviously like the American mythology. Somehow, like in The Dark Tower, Stephen King always is kind of referencing The Wizard of Oz to tell his American story. Like that somehow really contains an entire universe somehow and instructs one how to live.
Yeah, I'm on board with that. When you look at the nature of what turns a narrative into a story, from a story into a myth, you know, and then you look at the Greek mythology that was once just a story and then a myth, you have to say, well, there's something preserving it through time that allows people to not forget it. There's something that almost petrifies it, you know, that makes it into a fossil of a story and lets it endure, you know, the tests of time. And I think that there's something about it.
Somehow it transcends the local culture and becomes universal.
Beautifully put.
There's actually a Joseph Campbell would use, there's terms for that. I can't think of them, but yeah. And The Wizard of Oz does that.
For sure.
I don't know if Back to the Future, I mean, so that's what's so interesting is because we see the similarities. You have like two volcano movies, two ant movies. Like obviously there's this, it's not conspiracy. There's something out there in the flow that's, we're thinking about the same things at the same time. But then some of these things are just so profound that they... One of the things you said, Joe, was this notion of time connected to synchronicity. And Will, you posted a link to this movie coming out called Cloud Atlas. And so this is the thing that's interesting to me is how I'm reading a lot of stories that have begun to embody the notion of sync in them as like the fundamental form of the thing. Cloud Atlas tells lots of stories, but they're all the same people moving through time. So like it's the same person, but in different times, and they're figuring out that thing as they move through the story. Like they're finding letters basically from themselves in the past.
Right. It's some the call tag on it is everything is connected or something like that. But the amount, it's like every sync actor on the fucking planet is in the movie. It's really weird. It's really weird. I mean, Jason, or what's his name? Joseph Gordon-Levitt's in it. Tom Hanks is in it.
I hope he's in it. There's a guy that looks like him.
His name was Heath Ledger. Oh, sorry. Who has made his way to the land of the dead. I don't know.
Well, so perhaps that's what's happening with synchromysticism is that... So the idea of everything connected, this is like, okay, sure, that's our given now. You know, right. Now we're starting to deconstruct time. And Joe is our man here showing us with these great videos how this is done.
Thank you. Well, I'm just trying.
Good job, good sir.
Nice. Thank you.
We got about 6 minutes, 5 minutes. Is there any conversation that you would like to get out of the way, Mr. Bowles? Come on, hit him with a good one. Don't pass it back to me. Make Joe work for it.
Well, I mean, it's interesting that sync and the nature of the modern age is all like videos and computers and internet, and the internet naturally reflects the idea that everything's connected. But what about good old-fashioned linear books? Do you do much reading?
Yeah, you know, I like to read. I think that books have been an integral part of this, what I like to call the evolution of media. And I think that, you know, they are maybe the next step after just plain old storytelling. And when I talk about this evolution of media, I know this isn't exactly where you wanted me to go with this, but, you know, when I look at this evolution of media, I like to look at it in terms of storytelling, and then books, and then small cartoons, and then animated cartoons. And then and now we're at the stage where we have videos that really mimic real life in the sense that they're three-dimensional, and then hopefully eventually they'll be holographic, where we can actually submerge ourselves in the videos and feel like we're in them, almost like virtual reality. So if you look at media in that sense of evolution, I like to call this the blur, which is that it will blur our perception of what's real and what's not real. And when that happens, when we don't know that Superman is not real, when we don't know that humans can't actually fly, we will subconsciously make it happen. And we will find ourselves doing these things. And it will be media that has been the tool that has basically told our subconscious that these things are possible. And that's when, in my opinion, we'll experience this mass ascension of everyone believing in our own divinity, you know, believing that we can fly, believing that we're gods. And
it's a relief to hear you say that. I thought I was the only one.
No, I think that, so, that ties back.
There's a book called
It's Genetic Memory. It's the reason why film looks like DNA.
Right. Well, I've never heard that before, but I can see it.
If you twist the film, it looks like a DNA strand.
No, that's heavy right there. I like that. You know, and back to what you were saying, Will, about cartoons, I think that, you know, the cartoon really plays an integral role of this because the cartoons are manifestations of our thoughts, you know, and that's essentially what we are as spiritual beings. We create whatever we think, and cartoons are the most literal and observable example of that. We can't yet do it in movies. You know, we can't yet create anything we want. We can do almost anything, but not anything. But cartoons, anything is possible. So that was... Cartoons were a giant evolutionary leap in our spiritual understanding of limitless possibilities.
Wholeheartedly agree. Wholeheartedly agree. Yeah,
and
yeah.
That, go ahead. I'm sorry.
No. You can. I will send you my video called Plant Consciousness. It's in there, but you have to look.
I've seen it many times, Will. I've seen it many times. It's a beautiful video.
Well, that's the whole thing. Is the plants are the way to go into the playable, where physics just goes out the door. You know, they even call it. They say cartoon physics.
Mm.
That's where we're at, though. I mean, that's what's so bizarre is that as society, civilizations evolve, it seems like the state of thinking and the science are somehow in sync. And so our physics is totally in sync with...
Sync.
Like, everything is connected, and everything is actually nothing.
Yes. Science, I generally feel, is a step behind. Although, if you read enough of the material, especially with quantum physics, it's just so easy to see the connection. You know, people who are on the cutting edge of sync right now are, you know, essentially quantum physicists in 100 years. You know, if you... The quantum physics of non-locality and all of the crazy nonsense that it deals with on a mathematical and scientific basis, you know, sync explorers are dealing with that stuff on an everyday basis, and we already understand it to be true, you know, without the numbers, without the so-called facts, you know? So.
But then going back to your idea that you create reality with your mind, it's interesting how you don't know which came first, the chicken or the egg.
Absolutely.
The rooster. The rooster came first, I'm telling you.
Yeah. Is it our minds creating the science, or is it science?
In the innuendo. No, like Rupert Sheldrake says, that scientific laws are actually habits. But listen, this is pretty much the end of our time right now. Okay,
we got about a minute. Yeah.
Right. I want to thank you, Joe, for showing up and enjoying a 42 minutes with us. It's been a great joy, man. And
thank you guys. I went by fast. I appreciate you having me on.
Well, if you don't mind, we're going to stick around for just a little bit longer because I want to ask you about what you've got going as far as Sync Book 2 is going.
Let's do it.
All right. So thank you, everyone. You can visit what we have done with other people as well as Joe's earlier stuff at talkshoe.com and Google 42 Minutes. And also check out thesyncbook.com and hit the radio tab for more. And good night, Doug. Good night, Joe. See you guys soon.
Good night, guys.
Just like a rose. Everybody knows that you are so beautiful, but I feel a thorn on my heart. I should have known we can't repair what we broke, but I held you close, too close. I should have left your roses at the door.